Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta, your host. And today we're going to talk about how to overcome the fear of speaking up. And I want to share with you something that happened over this past weekend, and had the opportunity to go speak to the Haitian American Nursing Association of Rockland County, New York. And it was an amazing experience. It was really great. I was talking about how to claim your leadership voice. In fact, I think that would be a good episode in itself. But one of the things that came up, so the conversation was about leadership. It was a leadership retreat, and I went to with my clinical mentor, Renee Simone, and her sister, who spoke about emotional intelligence, and we talked about leadership in different ways. And so, like I said, you know, my topic was about this idea of leadership voice, that as we speak up, we become leaders. But, you know, one of the things that came up pretty quickly was the, you know, one of the things I asked, it was mostly women, and I asked them, you know, what are the things that really bother you and that you'd want to talk about? And some of the things that they discussed were, for example, the disparity in patient care, so that if someone comes in and they're wealthy, the way that they're treated in terms of as a patient is very different than someone who clearly isn't wealthy and doesn't have means and maybe doesn't have insurance or not very good insurance. And, you know, other things were about the idea that, you know, as women, and especially as women of color, we are devalued. We're not treated the same way as our white male counterparts. And so there are lots of different things, you know, but definitely there was a consensus of this idea of being devalued for being other. And, you know, one of the things I talked about was that it's so important as leaders to find ways to speak up and to speak our truth and to say, this is what I see and this is how I see it and this is what's important to me. On the other hand, though, it can be very difficult, because one of the things that happens, right, when we speak up oftentimes is that we're punished for speaking up, and or at least there's the implicit threat that we'll be punished. And, you know, I remember being in an organization for 10 years, you know, working in a state organization for 10 years, where it was very difficult, because, you know, I know there were times in working in child welfare that I wanted to speak up about something, but I was afraid to, because I was afraid of how it would be perceived, and I was afraid of losing my job, quite frankly, right? Losing my income to support my family. And I think that many of us are in that position where it can be very difficult to speak up, because, you know, there's that fear. And so, you know, what I want to talk about today is this idea of, you know, overcoming the fear of speaking up, and at the same time to acknowledge the real cost that's there sometimes when we do speak up, right? When you think about whistleblowers, or you think about just speaking our truth in general, that it can be very difficult to say what we need to say, because, you know, how are people going to take it? And I want you to think about, you know, as you listen to this, I want you to think about, what's something in your life today that perhaps you are passionate about, that you want to speak about, but you might be holding yourself back? You know, in what area of your life are you holding yourself back? And if you're not, that's great. But I feel that most of us, you know, myself included, to some degree, at any given time, we're holding ourselves back, and we're not truly saying everything that we need to say. You know, as a playwright for many years, people used to tell me that my work was really about people who couldn't say what they needed to say. And I do believe that that's really been my passion, you know, is to help people with that journey. And I think that, you know, we say we teach what we most need to learn. I think that for a large degree, that's been my journey. And, you know, I haven't talked about that much on this podcast about some aspects of my story, but, you know, I was raised in a Orthodox Jewish, an Orthodox Jewish community. And, you know, before that, I did go to public school, and my parents kind of converted to Reformed and then converted. My father converted to Reform and then he converted to Conservative and then he converted to Orthodox Judaism. So we kind of went through different iterations. And I remember being in, for example, being in Virginia, in which was, you know, in the 1970s. And I remember them talking about, you know, every Christmas, you know, talk about what are you going to do for Christmas? And I would say, well, I don't celebrate Christmas because I'm Jewish. And I remember, you know, really getting a lot of flack for that and just getting nasty stares and looks and people just giving me a hard time. And, you know, I was the only Jewish person in the class. And, you know, what I learned from that was kind of to shut my mouth, you know, to not say anything and to be quiet. And I remember after that, I remember going from that experience to eventually going to a religious Orthodox Jewish religious school. So now everyone was Jewish, but I didn't understand as much as the other kids did because I had been in public school and they had been in religious school. And so the teacher asked me about, there's something called tzitzis, it's like a, these strings that you wear, there's four corners of strings that you wear under your shirt. You know, it's attached to kind of like a shawl that you wear under your shirt. And so the teacher said something like, you know, where's your tzitzis? They're not hanging out. And I said, well, what is that? And all the kids in the class laughed. You know, and again, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I should have just kept my mouth shut. And, you know, those obviously aren't, you know, they're not the most traumatizing things that someone could go through. But overall, the message that I learned was keep your mouth shut, you know, really keep your mouth shut. Don't speak, don't say much. And although I've never really been one to keep my mouth shut, I have always been someone who's been very vocal. And, but at the same time, you know, there were things that I'd be vocal about, but then there are things that I would be quiet about. And, you know, I do think that I learned really from an early age, not to say some things that were on my mind, or not to speak up, or even if I didn't understand something. And, you know, over time it takes a toll. And so, you know, I would ask you to think about that as well. You know, even if you're an outspoken person and people consider you extroverted, in what ways are there conversations that you're avoiding or things about your own truth that maybe you are, that you're not speaking up about? And one of the things that came up at the retreat, which I think was so brilliant, is that, you know, as these women talked about their experiences and they talked about being devalued and they talked about, you know, they had a master's degree, but then, you know, they felt like they were treated like they didn't even have a high school diploma because they were women of color, you know. But if you say that, I mean, if you think about it, if you say that in public company, oftentimes you can get shut down, right? People say things like, oh, you're playing the race card. And, you know, there is a concept called white fragility, which basically is the idea that, you know, one of the ways in which we avoid having difficult conversations about race and about ethnicity is by saying, you know, by white people saying, that makes me uncomfortable. Why are you talking about that? And again, you know, shutting someone down. And when you get shut down, you just don't feel like you want to speak up. And so that's one of the big things that I've been thinking about a lot, you know, and this weekend really kind of solidified for me about how do you speak up when A, you're afraid of getting shut down, you're afraid of losing your job. And I want to give you a couple of things. There's no simple answers here, but one thing to think about is, you know, there is a time where it may not be appropriate, right? And if you have to support your family and you're afraid that if you speak up at a position that you're going to get fired, you know, maybe you need to first look for a new job, right? But I would say is to stay in a position like that, I think you're really going to damage yourself long-term. If you tell yourself, well, I can continue to do this, I really do think you're kidding yourself. And, you know, that was definitely my experience working in different jobs where I knew that at some point I had to get out because if I didn't, it would really impact my life in a negative way. You cannot stay for years and years in a position where you're silenced or in a situation where you're silenced. At some point, you've got to do something about it. But I do want to say that, you know, the other piece I would say is that you do have to have some discretion. And it's okay, I think, I'm giving you permission to say that it's okay to say, you know what, I know that I need to get out of this situation, but right now is not the time to speak up. And And that isn't about not having courage. You know, that's the piece about having discretion, right? Because we do, at the end of the day, have responsibilities. And sometimes it's just not the right time to speak up. At the same time, you know, one of the things I told the ladies at the conference was about my play that I wrote called Present Company Excluded, which is about the true story of Herbert Roth. And by the time I interviewed Herbert, he was in his late 80s. And the story that I wrote was about his experience having his bar mitzvah. He was the last Jewish boy to be bar mitzvahed in Roth, Germany before the Holocaust, and the last boy to have his bar mitzvah in Germany, in that town in Germany at all, ever, and the last Jewish family to get out of Roth, Germany alive. And one of the things that I learned from Herb is that, you know, he talked about how the Jews in the town were, they considered themselves Germans first and foremost. In fact, they had fought with the German army against the Allies in World War I. So they fought on the side of the Germans. They very much considered themselves proud Germans. And there had never been any issues in the town between the Jews and the Christians. And then as the rise of Nazism happened, he said, you know, one of the things that really happened was that there really weren't any Nazis in the town per se. There was one teacher that became a Nazi, but most of the people in the town were just silent. You know, it's not that they became these tremendous Nazis, but it was more that they were silent and they didn't say anything and they didn't speak up. And in fact, the only time that they did speak up was when the Nazis came into the town. They wanted to burn the synagogue down. And people in the town said, no, you can't burn down the synagogue because it's too close to the other businesses and you might burn down our other businesses and we don't want that. And what ended up happening is that the Nazis backed off and they actually didn't burn down the synagogue. And it still remains there today only for that reason, right? But they spoke up when it was something that it was their own property at stake, right? But they didn't speak up for other people. And one of the things that Herb said that I really liked was that, you know, he said, I decided right then that I would never, you know, if there was injustice, that I would speak up and I would not be silent because I know what the consequences of being silent are. And that was very powerful to me. So I also know that sometimes, you know, sometimes we have to have discretion and then sometimes we have to speak up. You know, right now we're seeing a lot of conversations about immigrants and about people that are here without documentation. And there's, you know, I think we do have a responsibility to stand up for our beliefs, for what we think is right. And to be able to say, you know, no, this isn't right. The way you're treating these people isn't right. But I think the other piece is that we have to speak our truth, you know, and discerning that. And you know, I've talked about this in other episodes, but really discerning what your truth is versus, you know, I'm not interested in what you believe. I'm interested in what your experience is, what your truth is. What you believe may be something that you read somewhere else. It might be someone else's words. That to me is not as interesting because I don't think that our truth has to do with our beliefs. Our truth has to do with our experiences, our point of view. And the other thing is that, you know, people don't have to necessarily agree with our point of view, right? They don't have to agree with our truth. But at the same time, to say, you know, this is how I see the world. This is my experience. Maybe it's not your experience, but it's my experience, right? And so the other piece that I would say in terms of overcoming the fear of speaking up is about surrounding yourself with people who will really value that. And, you know, this is something that has to do with, you know, from my therapy days, I think one of the things that therapy does really well, and one of the things that hopefully a good therapist does, is that they provide a space where you can feel like you can say what you need to say. They provide that safe, supportive space where you can be yourself, where you can fully express all the things that you need to express and just be accepted, you know, be accepted for who you are. And that is, I think, one of the most beautiful gifts that we can give another human being. But at the same time, you know, when people start doing podcasting or they start sharing content in some way and they say to me, well, how do I keep going? How do I keep the motivation going? And that is one of the things I say to them is, you know, make sure that you have a tribe behind you. Make sure you've got people in your corner, people that are going to cheer you on, because you know, there are going to be people, of course, who are not going to like what you're doing. In fact, you know, one of the things I often say is that when we speak up, you know, if you have haters, if you have people who don't like you, that means you're doing something right. Because the only thing worse than having haters is having no one pay attention and no one listening. So if you really put yourself out there, there's no doubt that you're going to have people who don't like what you're saying. There's no doubt that you're going to have people who don't agree with you, who criticize you, right? But if you have those other people who support you or in your corner, then you can weather that storm. You can really get through that place, and you know that you have that support behind you. So that's a really important piece of it. And then the other thing is, you know, to really choose the forum and medium that works best for you, that feels most natural. If you're not a natural speaker and it really, you need time to develop your thoughts, then maybe writing is a better way for you to express your voice. Not everyone, you know, when I say voice, I don't always literally mean your voice in the way that I'm doing this right now in a podcast. What I also mean is, when I say voice, I oftentimes am talking about this idea of, you know, voice as our truth, right? So we can do that in a video. We can do that through our physical voice. We can do that through writing. So if you're someone who's a little bit more introverted and you need more time to develop your thoughts, you know, writing may be a great way to do that. I personally love to, you know, I love speaking. I actually really enjoy writing as well, but I find speaking very quick and natural. So for me to speak to you today, for example, you know, I know what I want to say to you and I just come out and say it. But it might help you a lot to figure out, you know, what is the best medium for me? How do I feel most comfortable? The other piece I was saying at the retreat was about the idea too of use your words and your language. One of the things that came up, as well as the women were saying, that they felt very devalued because people said, well, you have an accent, you speak funny, you don't speak English, right? But I believe that a lot of our truth has to do with the way that we speak, and it has to do with our words. And when we're talking about, you know, speaking your truth and speaking up, it's not about writing a doctoral thesis. It's about using the language that you would use, not the language that I would use, but the language that you would use to describe your particular situation. And I think that there's something very liberating about speaking your truth in your language, right? Sometimes your language might mean, you know, if you speak another language other than English, maybe you actually originally voice that in whatever language you're most comfortable with. You know, if that's not English, then another language. But I do think that the power of words is, and the power of using language in the way that we would say things. I mean, if you think about any great comedian or singer, you know, what makes them special, right? They have a way of saying things that's unique and particular to them. And so there's no reason to think that you have to, I really feel like this is another way that we shut people down is they say something and then we criticize their grammar. You know, well, that's not the way, you know, that's not the correct way to say it. But then you don't address the content of what they're saying. You don't address the truth of what they're saying. And, you know, what kind of society would we live in? I mean, if you really think about it, I think it would be revolutionary if people were really able to speak their truth and say, this is my truth. But then not just speak their truth, but also be able to have that support of people who would listen to them, right? If we truly listen to people's truth. So that's the other side of this, you know, in order to overcome the fear of speaking up, I think the other piece is that we ourselves have to be that audience for others. We ourselves have to be open to hearing other people's truth. And sometimes that can be really hard because other people's truth can be something that conflicts with our beliefs and it can conflict with what we think is right. You know, can we hold this space? You know, oftentimes as a therapist, you know, seeing thousands of people over the time, you know, over a decade of time, one of the things that can be hard sometimes is, you know, what if somebody tells you something that you don't agree with, right? What if someone tells you something that, again, challenges your beliefs or just seems like, you know, what if somebody says, you know what? I mean, people, when I worked with addictions, you know, sometimes people would say, you know, I love using heroin and that's my truth right now. I know that it's bad for me, but I just love doing it and I can't get out of it, right? And then we oftentimes want to say, well, do this and do this and do this, and we want to get into solutions. But before we get into solutions, you know, what about just holding the space? I just found that there's so much healing that happens when we can just hold the space for somebody to actually speak their truth and not judge them. I mean, it doesn't mean that we don't discern or we don't assess, boy, you know, this is a really dangerous place for this person to be, but to just hold and accept where someone is. And so if we want other people to do that for us, then I think we need to do that for others. I will say that, you know, for the one of the things I want to add to this is, unfortunately, you know, for example, for people of that are whose voices have been marginalized, I think that they've been forced to do that, you know, to listen to dominant voices, which again, traditionally have been white male voices. But even what's interesting is that I'm producing a podcast right now called The Will to Change with Jennifer Brown, which, by the way, if you have a chance to check it out, it's a really great podcast. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about on the show is that everyone has a diversity story, even those you don't expect. So what's interesting, too, is that even, let's say, for someone who is a white heterosexual male, they may have a diversity story, regardless of what that might be, that might be hidden. And so even if we accept that, okay, this person's voice is going to be heard because they're part of that dominant society, it doesn't mean that all of their story is going to be heard. You know, if that person has struggled with a mental health issue, or they don't have a college degree, or there's some area in which they're disadvantaged or outside of the norm, that we don't often open up the space for people to speak. So what does that look like? You know, I'm going to talk more about this in future episodes, but I think it looks like what I said to the women was, it could be as simple as starting a blog and saying to people, you know, share your story here. This is a safe space to share your story. Any trolls that come, we will delete their comments. This is a place that's protected. You can share your stories and we will support you. And that creates a safe space, right? It could be something, a physical space. I mean, you could create a storytelling group or some type of meetup group where people can share their stories and share their truth, right? When I was a writer, I'm still a writer, but when I was a young writer, we used to have something, Gotham Writers Workshop in New York City invented this, and they called it being in the booth. And so when you would get feedback from your fellow writers, you would share your stories and then you get feedback. And when you got feedback, people would respectfully share feedback with you, and you were in the booth. And the booth meant that you had to be quiet and just listen to the feedback and take it in. And I think, you know, one of the things I think about is the idea that we could be in the booth, both in the sense of, let's say, the receiver of a message, but also maybe the people who listen, you know, need to be in that booth. And so you say, you know what, I'm going to share something with you. I don't need you to agree with this. I just need you to listen. I just need you to hear me and respect me. And then I will be happy to listen to your truth as well and be able to share our truth. And what's interesting is that I think at the end of the day, more than people agreeing with us or telling us we're right, I think we have a deep human need to be heard. It's really, I think, one of the deepest needs. It's as much of a hunger as eating, you know, the need to be heard, to be really heard and really seen and really valued. So how do we overcome that fear of speaking up? We find people and we surround ourselves with people who support us in doing that. We move ourselves into situations where we're truly, as much as possible, supported in that, so that we don't have to be struggling against a system that punishes us for speaking up. And then I think the other piece is that we just practice it. You know, we then, once we have that support and that grounding, then we have to model the way. At some point, you know, we have to just, as Nike says, just do it. At that point, you've got to do it. And the more you do it, the more you speak up, the more you share your truth, and the more you listen to others, I really do think that that can be absolutely transformational to society. Because if we can hear other people, it doesn't mean, like I said, that we have to agree with them. It doesn't mean that we have to, you know, see eye to eye with them. But when we allow that space, it we're valuing each other. And when we can express our truth, when we can say, this is how I see the world, this is what matters to me, this is what I care about, you know, this is what I see. I see that when, you know, Black women come into this hospital, they're not treated the same as rich, you know, as some rich white donor. And for someone to say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I can see how you would feel that way, right? Now, obviously, there's a lot more work that needs to be done, but that's the beginning. To me, that's the beginning of transformation, is the idea that we would even listen to each other and we would have the courage to speak up, and to speak up in a way that isn't about screaming and it's not about shouting. And that's what I really want to encourage you to think about, because, you know, the one thing that I don't think is helpful is when we're shouting at each other and you see protesters yelling and screaming at each other, because nobody in that situation, nobody is taking in anything from the other side. There's not a sense of truly listening. And really, there's not even, in a way, it takes less courage to shout at someone than it does to sit down right across from them and to say, this is my truth, this is the way I see it, right, in a more intimate setting. So the more that we can create those opportunities, and there are so many ways to do that, we'll talk more about this in future episodes, I just think that the world is at a place where, with social media and with all the platforms that we have, the time is right to share and speak our truth. So as I always say, keep creating. The world needs your voice. This is Doug Foresta on Creating Change.